So, the question is now we've laid out our cells and we've assigned a certain number of resources to them in terms of channels. And the question becomes, how many actual users can we accommodate within the system then? And then can is there any way we can sort of improve upon that? Okay. And so again, if you're in the master's program, you've probably seen this somewhere, but maybe not. We're going to look at some very basic telecom traffic analysis, and this is based on an idea that we have more users than channels available. Okay. But not everybody is going to be making a phone call at the same time. So you can accommodate more users than you have channels available in general. You know, say everybody only makes 1 5-minute phone call a day, and you have 6 channels, obviously you can have more than 6 users. Okay. So the problem with determining exactly how many users you can have is that we might be able to say on average what the usage is, but that is just an average. There's a randomness to the actual usage. So this problem has been studied within traditional telecom systems, and there what you trade off between is the amount of expected usage and the possibility that when a user goes to make a call, all the resources are open, in our case, all the channels are going to be taken, and therefore they can't make their call. Okay. This is studied in what's called airlines theory, and it was developed by Aron in the early 1900s, again, to look at the telephony system. Okay. The concepts sort of translate into cellular systems, and then the problem being mobility. Okay. So we're not going to go into any deep examination of the theory. We're just going to use the airline's results, specifically the airline B, probability blocking results, in order to get some feel for how this trade-off between the number of channels you have and the load you put on them and the probability of blocking, how that sort of trade-off plays out. Okay. So the first quantity we need to have a measure of is the desired usage in the system, which is referred to as the traffic intensity. Okay. And it's measured in units of airlines. There's 3 equivalent definitions for traffic intensity. So the first is, it's the average number of simultaneously busy channels. So you have 10 people and they're making an average of, you know, 5-minute phone call every day or every hour. How many channels are going to be kept busy by that amount of usage on average? Okay. We can measure that just by observing the usage over a certain period of time. Okay. And theoretically, this has an interpretation of being the number of calls made over the duration of a single call. And so, obviously, what we're going to want to do is to pick the number of channels we need relative to this offered load, this traffic intensity. Okay. So, looking at an example, we're making 20 calls per minute. With an average holding time of 3 minutes. What does this mean? This means, take our third definition of traffic intensity. Over the 3 minutes, 20 calls per minute or 60 calls are going to be attempted. Okay. So the question becomes, how many channels do you need to accommodate this amount of usage? Well, obviously you need at least 60, or else predictably you're going to start blocking people. Maybe you pick double that. The only drawback to that is on average, each channel is only used half the time, or over globally, your channels are only used about half the time. So you've over-provisioned. Okay. If you pick 60 exactly, you'd have perfect utilization. But, and again, since this is not predictable, but it's got the randomness in it, you would definitely be dropping calls due to the fluctuation in demand. Okay. So, the trade-off we're making here, again, is the more channels we are, so the less efficient the way the system is. But the more channels we have, the less probability that a user will arrive and find all of the resources taken. And so we want to have some way of reasoning about how many channels we need in order to satisfy the users, at least most of the time. So the first question is, how do we determine what the load on the system is? And typically it's observed that it varies throughout the user, throughout the day. Okay, and telephone companies are going to look at a busy hour, so the busiest hour during the day, and see what the load is at that point. Even looking at the busiest hour, it's not a guarantee that you won't have traffic in excess of that amount. So, given some measure of usage, we want to choose a number of channels. And of course, we're assuming that we have more users than actual channels, okay, because they aren't all going to be arriving or making calls at the same time. Okay. So trunking is this process of choosing the number of channels. And so for our purposes, for wireless systems, you're going to, each channel is going to be an output and a downlink slot. Okay. And those slots can be defined in a number of ways, either through a frequency, a channel, a time slot, or a spreading code. However many channels you end up allocating, and keep in mind that there's going to be some maximum number just defined by the sort of physical reality of the system, it's possible, given the uncertain usage by the users, that at any given point you're going to exceed capacity, and the user will be blocked. And we assume that if the user is blocked, they sort of go again, go away and try again later. Okay. So this leads us to what's called a loss system. We assume that users don't wait for the resources to become available. Okay, so what we tend to want to do is we want to pick some probability of loss that's acceptable and then ask the question, how many channels do I need to? So I'm given usage, I'm given a probability of loss I find acceptable, how many channels do I need to provide to maintain that probability of loss. The probability of loss, or again, specifying the maximum acceptable probability of loss, is referred to as grade of service. Okay. And it's this grade of service is what's used to again, benchmark our system. Okay, so there's a mathematical model of this. Which relates the probability of blocking, so again, the maximum probability we find acceptable is what we specify in our grade of service, the number of channels provided, and the amount of traffic, the statistical measure of the amount of traffic. Okay. And so, given P and A, it's not going to be trivial to solve for N. But the relation between these three quantities has been worked out and is typically available as either a table or a graph. Okay, so I use graphs in the lecture just because they're visual. In the problem sets, you'll see I've given you tables. Okay. So, what we get is a relation between the traffic intensity and the probability of blocking, and that gives us a curve, a different curve depending on how many channels are available. And so typically what we do is we fix the grade of service and then either determine what traffic intensity, what's our maximum traffic intensity based on the number of channels, or as you said before, what number of channels do we need based on our maximum traffic intensity. Okay. And so we have our graph here. Our traffic intensity is along the x-axis, the probability of blocking block is on the y, and each line represents the relation between traffic intensity and probability of blocking based on how many channels you have available. These graphs are all in log form. Okay, so we'll just make a couple of observations that we can see fairly easily off of our graphs. And the first is that a large capacity system is more efficient than a small capacity system in giving grade of service. And by this, what's meant is over a given area, it's more efficient to have all of the channels available than to split it up into multiple cells and have channels available in each cell. And you can sort of think about this in terms of users. If you have just a cell, then it doesn't matter how your users are distributed in that cell. If you have multiple cells, well, then it starts to matter how many users are in each individual cell. Okay. So we're going to look at two cells with a capacity of 10 channels or one cell with a capacity of 20 channels and a grade of service of 0.002. And so, again, what we want to we have a fixed number of channels. In the first case, for the smaller cell, you have 10 channels. I'm following that down to a grade of service of 0.002. We get the intersection of the grid lines, and we drop that down to the graphic intensity of what did I
say it was? 6.8.
And again, we can look at the 20 channels, drop it down to the grade of service, and you get a traffic intensity a little bit over 10.
I should apologize.
That's 6.8 for two, so it's traffic intensity 40.4 for each cell with two cells. So traffic intensity of 6.8 overall versus traffic intensity of 10 for the larger cell.
Okay. So again, what that indicates is you should try and keep the amount of cells in a cluster to as much of a minimum as you can. Okay. Having said that, large capacity systems are more sensitive to an increase
traffic. So the more channels you have, the more sensitive it is to traffic increases. And so, we can look at how much traffic as a percentage is going to take to reduce the grade of service from 0.02 to 0.01. And we'll do that for 10 channels or 70 channels. And so here is the 10 channel, and so again, we saw before for grade service of 0.02, our traffic intensity is 3.4. Now, for grade service of 0.01, our traffic intensity is 4.4. And so that means that there you need a 30% increase in the amount of traffic to cause that degradation. Now if we look at our 70 channels, as before, not as before since we've been doing this one before, if you have a grade of service of 0.02, that leads to a traffic intensity of 51. If you have a grade of service of 0.01, that leads to a traffic intensity of 56. And you can see that that's roughly a 10% increase, 11% increase in the offered load causes that degradation of grade of service. So, you know, that's sort of the flavor of what you can expect out of this sort of analysis. Again, it does allow you to explore the trade-off between the number of users and the number of channels required. As we said before, this analysis was originally carried out for telephone networks, and it made assumptions about the characteristics of the arriving traffic. It adhered to a Poisson arrival process, basically. One issue with doing this for cells is that we not only have users initiating calls, but we also have to account for user mobility. Okay. And so similarly, so that means that the new calls are either somebody initiates a call in the cell or they move in for it from a different cell. The completion rates, again, the call completion is either the call is finished or, again, the user moves out of the cell. Okay. So this does make it more complicated and, again, limits the mathematical value of the Ehrenmann's theory. And so frequently, again, simulation models will be used to take this into account. But nevertheless, you know, again, you can get some feel for what the issue is by examining Ehrenmann's theory. Okay, so that leads us on to our final topic of the day, which is that of increasing capacity. And so I'm a cell, I've been given a certain number of channels. What can I do if, you know, the usage is exceeding the, you know, what is handleable within those channels. Okay. And so, one option is, so far we've looked at this fixed allocation of channels. Well, we can consider other allocation alternatives. So if one cell is busier than another, give it more of the channel allocation. Okay. We can also change the physical characteristics of our network. So we can split congested cells into smaller subcells. And we can also use directional antennas to try and decrease the amount of intercell interference. Okay. So, globally, again, the system can take a multi-cell view of channel allocation, or if you're in CDMA, then what's called cell breathing can be used, which again just increases or decreases the range of the cell to try and keep the number of users within the cell stable. Okay. So if we want to do channel assignments, we can either do this in some sort of pre-allocated fashion, and the plus of that is that you can, you know, sort of study the problem in depth and try to come up with optimal solutions, or you can try and allocate the channels on a case-by-case basis. Or dynamically. Okay, so we can, allocation strategies, or we can again allocate it. If a cell is likely to be congested, we can allocate the resources sort of up front. Or we can do this sort of based on the actual usage patterns. Okay. Either way, again, what borrowing can be done has to be sort of agreed beforehand, and then the MSC will keep track of the channel allocation and which base station has control of which channels. Above a certain point of usage, then this actually becomes detrimental. Again, just because you'll have given a channel to a one cell, which is then really required in the next cell. Okay. So a hybrid channel assignment divides cells into the channels into two categories. Some, you know, leaves each cell with at least minimum number of channels to be able to serve a certain load, and then within that, and then the rest of the channels are up for grabs. And you can have you can possibly change the number of channels belonging to each category with traffic conditions.
at an extreme end, again, we can try to allocate the channels on a call-by-call basis. Okay. And as you can imagine, working this out in any sort of optimal fashion is quite complicated. And so it's for relatively light loading, it can actually improve the situation. But once again the system becomes more heavily loaded, then you're going to end up with situations where the channels have been assigned in a non-optimal fashion. So again, not respecting all of our interference criteria. And it's very difficult then to reallocate the channels. Okay. So on some sort of basic level, you can, again, try and favor cells which you know will be more heavily loaded, but that's only going to take you up to a certain point. Okay, and you can have hybrid allocations as well, so where each cell has own certain channels, and then as before, where adjacent cells were allowed to borrow, here we can have dynamic allocation of the rest of the channels. Okay, and finally, we can either plan the channel assignment in advance, depending on what we know about traffic, and so again, that's a little bit easier situation, or try to allocate on the fly based on observations of the traffic. Okay, so that just summarizes our different options of allocating the channels in a fixed way, doing it on a call-by-call basis, or a halfway house, doing a bit of both. Okay. So, we can increase capacity by essentially shrinking our cell radii. Okay. And so the main issue with doing this is that we'll end up with needing more base stations for our coverage. I do have a picture there. Okay. Okay, and so the basic idea is if we shrink our cell radii, we can keep our reuse factor constant. Okay. And again, increase the number of cells. Okay. So this is an example for a diamond-shaped cluster. So if we reduce the cell radius by half, each original cell is now broken up into four smaller cells. Okay. And we'll then reduce the transmit power as well, so proportionally, to keep the ratio the same. Okay. So,
the channel interference factor the same. So each original cell is split into four cells, but where the original cells would get a quarter of our channels, we now cover that same area with the full channel allocation. And so in any given space, you have, over any given area, you have now four times the number of channels available. So we keep doing this, we keep reducing our transmit power and increasing the number of base stations we need. Okay, and so both of those factors eventually can be problematic. Remember, we have to keep our transmit power above the noise threshold, and again, if we keep adding base stations, there's a cost to that, and we can only take this method so far. Okay, so as I've said, there are issues with the power. We have to keep the transmit level at a certain level. We're increasing, there's a cost in the number of base stations required. And furthermore, what we're, you can see what we're doing is we're shrinking the area of our cells, and therefore you're going to be handing over more frequently. Okay. And so if your cell becomes too small, handover is not an instantaneous process, so you're going to start losing. Okay, our final two techniques, self-sectoring and microcell zones, are looking to maintain the cell size but reduce the signal to interference ratio, and they both use directional antennas in order to do that. So for cell sectoring, we divide our cell into sort of pie wedges, and so we might have 3, 6 or more sectors, and each of those will be governed by a directional antenna. Okay. The benefit of this is that decreases the number of interfering cells. Okay, so if we were to take this cell, for instance, then it's fortunate of the cell that this one will interfere, and but this one down in the bottom won't, and the ones around the other side won't. Okay, so we've reduced the number of interfering cells from 6 down to 2. There's also a slight increase in the region, the distance of the two interfering regions. So the main gain, again, we're getting is by reducing the number of interfering cells. The cost is having to provide more antennas, and we'll now have handover not only within a set but between different cells, but we can also have handovers within the cell as you move from one sector to the next to the next.
Okay.
And finally, it will decrease the efficiency of channel utilization unless all the users are evenly spread throughout the cell.
Okay. So if we look at our example again, we have two interfering cells. And so our signal to interference ratio is now 1 over 2 instead of 1 over 6. And we can still plug in our relation. Cells now, and again, and we might solve for anything. So we see that our reuse factor of N has increased from 2 burrs SIR. From 2 SIR to 2 thirds SIR. Okay, so we want to need less cells within the cluster. And plugging in numbers, in SIR5, for the sectorized system, we can get away with 4 cells per cluster. For the omnidirectional system, we need 14. But again, you have to keep in mind that each of those cells is now going to be sectorized, so there is an additional splitting within the cell as well. Okay, so our final technique, microcell zones, seeks to take this idea of using directional antennas to reduce interference, but still allow the cell to share all of the channels available to it instead of with sectorized speed, split the channels per sector. Okay. So instead of having a base station in the center, and then directing your antennas outwards, forming these pie wedges, we now place the antennas at the edge of our cell, and we direct them inwards. Okay. And so, in this way, we get full coverage within the cell. The since they are sectorized antennas, we are still reducing our interference. But now, since the antennas are directed inwards, we can allocate our channels as we go, and even as you move from one range to another,
you can maintain the same channel. Okay, so you don't have handoff within the cells.
Okay.
So, again, that represents, because the name is lack of handoff, it represents an improvement over the cell sectorization method. So finally, again, just to mention with CDMA, the signal to interference ratio is dependent not only on the adjacent cells, but the users, how many users you have within the cells. And so what we want to do then is to try and limit the number of users within a cell as well as externally. And therefore, the more users you have in a cell, the cell seeks to try and reduce its range. Okay, so to shrink its borders. And by doing that, what does it do? Well, new users are less likely to enter the cell, and the current users are more likely to hand over. So if you have a congested cell adjacent to non-congested cells, the congested cell reduces its range and again offloads at least some of its traffic to less congested cells. So that's it for the lecture today. I'll leave you to ponder. I guess I better actually post this problem, but just a comparison of capacity for omnidirectional sectorized systems. Next week, I will have posted the assignment, which is going to be based on NS3 and examining a certain, sort of aspects of 802.11, so wireless LAN transmission, although, pretty much everything that's there is probably applicable to most systems. So the lecture will be split into two parts. I will be talking about 802.11 for the first half of the lecture, and then the demonstrator will come in and talk to you about the simulation package NS3 that you're going to need to actually do the assignment. So, I'm guessing some of you at least have seen NS3 before. Yes? No? 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 Okay. Well, anyway, then the hardest thing about NS3 tends to be actually installing it on your laptop. Once you've gotten through that, it's the assignment is not that complicated. You're required to set up a fairly simple wireless setup and then run it under different conditions. So it's once you get the NS3 up and running, it shouldn't be that bad. Okay, so I will see you guys next week, and as will the demonstrator.